And we have the herb doctors.
Well, welcome to this month's Ask Your Herb Doctor. My name's Andrew Murray.
My name's Sarah Johannesson Murray. Welcome.
It's the 17th of July, 2020. For those of you who perhaps have never listened to the shows before, they run every third Friday of the month from 7 to 8 p.m. And we have a live call-in from 7:30 to 8 o'clock. If you're invited to and you want to call in, you're all invited. The number is 1-800-KMUD-RAD. So from 7:30 to 8 o'clock, we'll open up the phone lines for people to call in with questions about this month's show, which is a continuing topic of coronavirus and some new information that's come out. And it's spearheaded, I guess you could say, by Dr. Pete, who's kindly joined us again, has some more information. And these shows are archived on KMUD's site at kmud.org. Go to the audio archives. Look for Friday Night Talk, and then scroll through the third Friday of the month. They only have about 3 months online that you can download, but you can go ahead and listen to them online anytime and or download them. So once again, we're joined by Dr. Raymond Pete. Dr. Pete, you with us?
Yes, hi.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us again, as always. Perhaps for people that maybe haven't heard your voice or heard your name, oh, don't know anything about you, listen for the first time here, perhaps. I think we always catch new people by serendipity sometimes. Would you just outline your academic and professional background for people listening so they know where you are educated?
I went to a teacher's college as an undergraduate and studied humanities, and then for a while went to Ohio State studying linguistics, and then I started an experimental school, spent a few years on that, and finally decided to go back to the university to get a PhD in biology, and that was 1968 to 72, and since then I've been doing a mixture of humanities and biology.
Okay. I think I also want to just put in there that both Sarah and myself are naturopathic doctors, essentially, with an MSc in herbal medicine from England. And we were practicing here when we came here in 2001 up until the time when we first really met you or introduced to you from actually a breast cancer patient survivor who lauded you and had nothing but good things to say about you. And that's when we first came into contact with you. So we've been in the kind of background of alternative medicine and looking at alternatives in most directions. I know you've definitely opened our eyes for alternatives to what we thought were alternatives, but have later been found to be actually quite deleterious for you. And I think we're going to bring some of that out in the beginning questions that I have for you. So firstly, before we get into all the related subjects surrounding the suspicious nature of the pandemic, and the various implications of social control being unraveled, not to mention the economic collapse and restructuring, let me first ask you about a very recent publication, or should I say a very recent pre-publication, as it hasn't yet been published, but it's going to be, I'm sure, which implicates linoleic acid, an omega-6 compound, one of the so-called essential fatty acids found in vegetable oils, nuts, seeds, meats and eggs. And I know you've always been opposed to all PUFA, the polyunsaturated fatty acids, as detrimental to health, being pro-inflammatory, etc. The pre-publication article seems to imply that this linoleic acid is actually responsible for allowing the spike protein of the coronavirus to dock with the cell membrane and thus facilitate entry into the cell as an initial action, implying that diets rich in linoleic acid may put patients at increased risk for contracting coronavirus or an increased symptoms or severity if coronavirus is contracted. And it is this very omega-6 fatty acid which has been pushed on the populations of the world for the last 40 years in the form of soybean oil, seed oils like fish oil, flax, canola. And they've become so vogue and ubiquitous in the food supply. Unless you know, you're unwittingly consuming these in great quantities daily. So your background as opposing these things for the last 30 or 40 years, again, is being borne out as pertinent in the case of coronavirus. And what do you think about the paper, and what do you think it speaks to?
It actually should be a revolutionary paper, because it shows that linoleic acid is essential for forming the receptor binding site of the spike protein. The spike protein is the whole thing that makes this a more dangerous form of coronavirus than the common flu, common cold. If you can't form the crucial thing that makes it infective without linoleic acid, then that has all kinds of ramifications, because it has been known now for 80 years that in a human experiment overseen by George Burr, who was the originator of the idea that these things are essential for nutrition, a person in his lab went for 6 months on a highly purified diet in which there was absolutely no measurable level of linoleic or linolenic or arachidonic acid or any of the polyunsaturateds. And after about 4 months into the experiment, instead of getting symptoms of a deficiency, his chronic health problems, such as migraines and I think hypertension to a mild degree, simply disappeared and never came back. And those effects.
And that didn't change their viewpoint on the essential fatty acids, did it?
No, that was totally passed over when animal experiments showed that they were not at all essential. It was in 1929, there was very little known about nutrition. And so what happened was, when they added the polyunsaturated fats, the metabolic rate slowed tremendously. Burr himself demonstrated that in 1932 or 33, suppressing metabolism by about 50% when he added back the essential so-called fatty acids. All of that was passed over when the seed oil industry had to dispose of the fatty oils from, for example, soy oil. It had been used along with other unsaturated fats for making plastics, varnishes, paints, and there was a new petroleum-based industry coming in, so they had to find a new market for all of their soy oil and related fats, and so they revived the old 1929 study, which had been disproved for 20 years, and said these are essential, so you should eat lots of them. Absolutely no science, but it worked for about 70 years. It has convinced lots of people to eat polyunsaturated fats.
So if a myth can be around back then, where how they convinced everybody that they needed these essential fatty acids, which are not essential at all.
And they changed the diet of the world,
and that's
the Western world.
How media and mass propaganda can, if that's how it can do these horrible things, just imagine it's still going on today. There's nothing new. There's propaganda that gets spread around, and
animal experiments.
Where it's so modern and technical now doesn't mean this propaganda doesn't get spread around.
The animal experiments showed that a diet free of the essential fats prevented diabetes, cancer, inflammation from trauma, sickness from poisoning, everything they could think of. The resistance to it was vastly higher if they had been totally deprived of the unsaturated fats. And the experiments showed that you can create a deficiency if you're very diligent in your diet. William Brown did it in 4 months with an extreme diet, but a person can do it in a year or two with a moderate, tolerable diet. And since those studies have been essentially suppressed, no one wants to talk about them because they hurt oil sales. But since those have been suppressed, it's assumed that everyone has to have linoleic acid on the surface of their cells, which is untrue. But since the doctrine says it has to be there, then they won't be able to accept that it's the cause of much of the infection of coronavirus, even though it's essential for the formation of the infectious binding unit.
Interesting. It's another vindication of what you've been saying for four decades or more. I know you've been out in the wilderness shouting. So what do you think the mechanism? It's obviously an inflammatory mechanism by its own right. Even though they're calling these essential fatty acids, they're obviously pro-inflammatory in their own right. Do you think there's anything else other than a mechanistic lock and key, that if linoleic acid is there in en masse in the membrane of the cells of people that have high polyunsaturated diets, that they are more susceptible?
The existing doctrine that this docking site is the ACE2 protein, part of the angiotensin system, and the mechanism has been understood for almost 20 years now that this particular enzyme destroys the pro-inflammatory angiotensin. ACE2 is the anti-inflammatory enzyme that makes angiotensin harmless. And the virus sticks to and inactivates the ACE2 enzyme and removes our protective enzyme against inflammation. And so removing our protection, then all kinds of inflammations set in and have nothing directly to do with whether the virus gets into your cell or not. It's knocking out our protection just by sitting on the surface of the cell.
And you're saying this is more easily facilitated in people with a high linoleic acid diet because they've implicated linoleic acid as being a cofactor in the transport mechanism, if you like.
It's apparently essential for inactivating our protective ACE2 enzyme. And in the actual mechanism of the protective ACE2 enzyme has been known, but apparently only by a few dozen people, where hundreds of doctors say that's the receptive site for infection. So if you have more of that, you're going to get sick with a higher probability. And since estrogen decreases that ACE2, progesterone increases it, they have theorized that giving estrogen will prevent infections by eliminating ACE2, but that happens to be our protective enzyme. And estrogen has many overlaps, very close all through its history with the polyunsaturated fats. They increase estrogenicity, and estrogen increases their accumulation in the tissues. So it's very logical that both estrogen and polyunsaturated fats favor the damage done by the virus. For progesterone, women who are cycling, anyone basically under 45 and female is extremely protected against infection, and they have the high level of the protective ACE2 enzyme, which supposedly would make them more infective.
Yeah, they've come out with studies that said men are more likely, I think 40 or something percent more likely than women. So that's interesting. You mentioned that the progestogenic protection that women get being part and parcel for fewer instances. Okay, well, you're listening to Ask Your Herb, Dr. KMUD Gulliver, 91.1 FM, from 7:30 till the end of the show at 8 o'clock. You're invited to call in with questions related to this month's ongoing expose, if you like, with the pandemic. Number, if you would like to call in, is 1-800-KMUD-RAD, KMUDRAD. I wanted to let people know the article that was published in 2020 showing that the free fatty acids, linoleic acid specifically, if people want the evidence, it's always good to get the facts. Their paper is the preprint server for biology. It's called BioRxiv, and it's called titled Unexpected Free Fatty Acid Binding Pocket in the Cryo-EM Structure of SARS-CoV-2 Spike Protein.
They weren't expecting to find this, so they had to title the article Unexpected Free Fatty Acid.
Yeah, so it's a 2020 document, so if people would like to look for that document online, it's a preprint article abstract. We expect to see the article in its full glory here some point soon. So, Dr. Pete, let me ask you this. There seems now to be a near-hysterical media frenzy concerning a second wave, as if the height of summer were irrelevant concerning seasonal influenzas, of which this is another. And the worldometer related to coronavirus data showing infections and death, which shows a rising graph, implies widespread infection and death. Would you speak to the actual numbers, as we have done in previous shows, and highlight the important factors which mark this outbreak as no worse than any typical seasonal influenza? And then we'll get into some of the underlying actors behind what we think here is not a serious problem.
Several people have asked me about what about the doubling of corona diagnosed deaths in Texas and Florida in the last month. And so I looked at the actual numbers, same as I did with the national figures published by the CDC from January through up to almost the present, and nothing was happening in the national figures, and what I see in the Texas and Florida numbers is that the increase in tests in the population, for example, in Florida in the last month, the number of people tested has gone from 50,000 to 70,000, while the number of diagnosed corona case deaths has increased by exactly the same proportion, 50% in a month. So if no more people are dying, exactly the same expected daily number of deaths in both Texas and Florida, as in the whole U.S., you know that really nothing is happening except a lot of media and government noise trying to panic the people. But what I happened to notice in the national figures at the end of March, I started looking at the total mortality week by week, going back to from the end of March to January 1st, there was a very weird suppression of total deaths in the United States from all causes, accidents, old age or whatever, there was a 10 or 15% decrease in all deaths around the country starting around January 1st. There's a right-wing columnist, Joe Hoft, I think his name is, H-O-F-T, on the Internet, who did a more thorough study of that. He went back several years comparing the weekly mortality, and he sees exactly the same thing, but going back decades, this is a unique avoidance of death starting in January 1st, as published by the CDC, continuing all the way until the end of March, when they decided to declare the pandemic, and within a couple of days, there was a gigantic, also historically unprecedented peak of deaths called the COVID mortality spike. But if you look at the missing part of the graph, the weird depression, the missing number of deaths amounts to the extra deaths piled up as soon as the pandemic was declared. I think any prosecutor looking at that graph just in itself would say a criminal investigation has to be done. Congress should start an investigation. Any congressman could ask for a government accounting office or the Department of Justice to start investigating a criminal conspiracy to fail to declare the normal amount of mortality week by week, starting 3 months in advance, knowing that they were going to want a pile of deaths to happen when they declared the pandemic outbreak.
So the figures have been manipulated to allow this sudden spike on cue, as it were, for the announcement that this was a pandemic and people had to take it seriously.
Anyone just looking at the graphed statistics from the CDC will see this historically unique mortality, where it has always been a pyramid, a volcanic shape, steeply up and then steeply down the other side. This year, starting in January, the steep rise abruptly stops, becomes a flat depression, and then a super steep, unhistorical rise on the other side. It's obviously manipulated.
And this has to be someone from the CDC, because those are graphs and numbers that you're looking at from the CDC.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where the criminal investigation really should be going on.
Okay, well, that's food for thought, and that's the evidence there, and that is fact. So we're not just conspiracy theorists here, folks. Everything that we've said so far can be looked at, verified, and investigated. I wanted to ask you, Dr. P, I saw an article, it was a 22-minute article that people can go check themselves, by Professor Dennis, or Denise, it's called, one N, Professor Denise Rancourt.
So Denny,
D-E-N-I-S. Okay, Rancourt. He's a PhD. He's been in government positions, and he's got a very interesting 22-minute interview, which he gives with Del Bigtree on the website BitChute. And chute is spelled C-H-U-T-E, which I think seems to be more of an alternative to YouTube, so BitChute. But he speaks to the fact that face masks showed no significant influence on viral infectivity rates from a 2020 Chinese study. Interestingly, which leads me to my next question, if we are to imagine this as a staged event, which all the metrics look like supporting, that the face mask wearing is a psychological control tool, a dog training by the emerging authoritarianism, which we'll get into in a bit, seen in governments worldwide now. Face masks are no good, huh?
At first, they told people to stay inside and at least in England and Italy and some other countries, the police were actually making people stop walking their dog, go inside, stop working in their garden and go inside. Just a crazy degree of pushing people around. And when they saw that that had worked fairly well, I think the ordering wearing of face masks was just another stage in obedience training. If they can make them stay indoors, maybe they can make them do just about any fool thing with no scientific basis. And it turned out that, in fact, most people were willing, with absolutely no evidence, 14 controlled studies found that there was no effect, no protective effect from wearing a mask.
Right, that's what Professor Rancourt talks about. So very interesting. So if people want to verify this, go to, I think, again, this is on BitChute. It may well be on YouTube, but BitChute, BitChute, if you type in Professor Denys Rancourt, you should come up with a video, 22 minutes. He mentioned the same thing, that 14 studies were done. They were controlled studies with outcomes, measured outcomes, so very rigorous bases for forming a judgment, and that none of the 14 reviews or interventions that were being challenged came out with anything beneficial about wearing a mask. And so begs the question, who's actually listening to this information and who's making the call? Who is prescribing ventilators that kill people? Who is prescribing face masks that keep everybody in a state of fear and panic, when he is clearly saying that because influenza, not just this influenza, but influenza in general, is an aerosolized spread format, he said that it's ridiculous that there's a frenzy to wash hands and to wash tables, because the things that they call fomites in science, these kind of inanimate objects that we have around us, he said that that's not the way influenza spread. It's purely aerosolized. So, as you mentioned, being in a closed, confined space with other people with symptoms of coronavirus or common cold is a very good way to catch it, because it's aerosolized and you're going to be breathing it in. And that the face mask itself really didn't significantly improve your chance of preventing its occurrence in you, because he said unless you're wearing a full face mask with NIOSH respirators attached to them so that your face was sealed.
Well, and then your whole body sealed, because he said that the viral particles are so small they'll get stuck in cracks of your skin, and it could blow off and go down into your lungs. So
anyway, the fact is that he's saying that face masks don't show any benefit. So why are we wearing them? Why do we feel that we're safer? Why is virtue signaling? I've never really wanted to kind of repeat this phrase, but it is a kind of dog training virtue signaling exercise that we're all looking at each other with face masks, and we all have this fear, and fear is a huge tool used to manipulate various different circumstances. And if we're looking at everybody looking at us with a face mask on, don't we reinforce what we feel is something that's real, when actually, number one, there seems to be a lot of suspicious data surrounding coronavirus. There seems to be a lot of poor practices that are killing people. There doesn't seem to be the huge death rate, and face masks are ineffective. Anyway, you're listening to Ask Hero, Dr. Kamidi Garbhul from 91.1 FM. From now till the end of the show at 8 o'clock, you're invited to call in with any questions related or unrelated to the ongoing topic of coronavirus. And we're going to get into some of the authoritarian control, look at World Health Organization, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, see how this plays into with Codex Alimentarius, which we'll get into a bit. But if you're, you'd like to call in, the number is 1-800-KMUD-RAD. So, Dr. Pete, I think you were going to say something before I cut you off.
The mask wearing reminds me of the Henny Penny story. And it seems like most people didn't get the proper ending. I think they might have got a censored version of Henny Penny. In the original version, Henny Penny and all of her friends on the way to tell the king about the crisis are eaten by Foxy Loxy. And
so,
it's intended as a warning against falling for conspiracy panic ideas.
So we just, as your engineer, we just had a caller, but they just hung up. They didn't want to wait, I guess. But caller, do call back, and it's half past now, so 923-3911. And since I don't have Andrew to wave my finger at him, or Sarah to wave a finger at, I'll just kind of butt in like I just did there. So no callers now because they hung up.
We're actually remotely calling for these last couple of shows because of the fear. But anyway, it's 1-800-568-3723 or 707-923-3911.
And honestly,
another interesting point I wanted to say is that the CDC, which, you know, we have to follow our state guidelines, wherever, whatever state you live in, but the CDC, which is the federal guidelines, say mask wearing is optional. Now, I think if there were studies showing that it was super effective, they would be saying it's mandatory. But other states are suing other businesses and companies, organizations in certain states are suing their state, saying it's unconstitutional to wear a mask. So it's also interesting to look at those points when you think about mask wearing.
Okay, Dr. P, I know that we've covered, I guess you'll go ahead, Michael, and let me know just as, however you wish, that there is callers waiting as
okay.
And when they are.
And I just put it out there, please call on the 93 number because people call long distance and it costs, people call from phone booths thinking it's free. We spend so much money on one person's calls from phone booths. So 933911 in the 707 area code. And
yeah.
I think we have a caller coming in, but just 1 second.
Okay. Let's just
okay,
wait.
Here they are. Caller, you are on the air.
You're on the air.
I made the mistake.
What's your question
and
where from?
Number and apologize. So I'm just curious about the statistics that these doctors are talking about, because when I talk to and I have family that are nurses in different hospitals, they're all wearing masks. The few nurses that were exposed and were now infected, they had incidences where they didn't have proper masking and they were infected. So this would be contrary to what these two doctors or people were talking about. It seems like we're focusing a little bit on the conspiracy side, and I'm all for that. Believe me, I don't trust our government at all. But what I look at when I see the media around the world and I talk to other people who live in other countries, they're going through the same things. The countries that actually mandatory masks were required, their numbers are super down. The three countries, America, Brazil and India, that didn't have masks and proper procedures are the ones being hit the hardest. So wouldn't this kind of contradict to what they're saying about people not wearing masks? Because that is a major issue, is wearing masks can actually stop. Not saying a cloth over your face, but an N95 mask can actually reduce your spreading of the virus. It doesn't prevent you from getting it, but it prevents or at least eliminates some of the bacteria, the viral antigens that are coming out of your mouth into the air. So I'm just a little worried about what I'm hearing over the radio from KMUD, that you're kind of going along the Republican line of like, well, we don't need masks, that's all a conspiracy. And then we see like Florida and other states that don't mandatory it. We're dealing with schools opening and they're saying, we don't need masks for kids. Okay, well, I'm a little worried about KMA because I kind of rely upon you guys for bringing in the truth. And what I'm hearing right now is somewhere along the kind of like far out there conspiracy theory, telling people that you don't need to wear masks, it's fine. And that might kill people.
Think about what you're saying.
And, you know, be better. Damn sure that you know what the fuck you're talking about. Excuse my language. Because you're...
let me let you know, again, where this information is coming from so you can see if this person needs to be held accountable and whether or not you agree with this person. So this is Professor Dennis Rancourt He's a government official who's worked with healthcare official and policymaking in Canada. And he has a 22-minute video. He's interviewed by Dell Bigtree, and he is stating categorically that there is no scientific data supporting the use of face mask wearing and that it does not significantly decrease transmissibility. What he's saying is that any of these face masks, whether they're N95 or just regular face masks that people wear or scarves or whatever, they don't seal your face. And whilst influenza is an aerosolized airborne vector and is easily inhaled and exhaled through small folds in your skin around which the face mask should seal but doesn't, unless you're wearing a full respirator for phosgene or some other biochemical warfare agent, which means that you're completely isolated from the environment by the respirator itself, then it really doesn't do any good. And he's saying that actually, in some ways, it's more harm than good because you're constantly breathing and rebreathing into these masks. And then there's the whole issue of contamination where people are basically either, you know, they come across people that have sneezed and they touch a surface and they take their mask off. And then therefore they've contaminated their mask straight away. They put it back on when they get out of their car to go to another store, take it off when they come back into their car. And so the whole thing is just not an infection control mechanism. It's basically people putting masks on, taking masks off, and that actually they do not seal enough around your face to make any difference. And that 14 peer-reviewed studies, which you can listen to him, have categorically stated there is unequivocal evidence to support that it is a useless practice. So I don't think it's partisan, but that's the facts.
Well,
so anyway.
Okay, well, then how do you explain in the hospitals where you have COVID wards and people are wearing masks there, and then the people who aren't get infected? So,
well,
the doctors
wearing face masks have been infected
plenty. But by saying that it's going to actually make people more contagious or possibly get it, you know, broadcasting this out here could possibly be contributing to a factor that is mass population not wearing masks, which leads to mass death. So that's like Agenda 21, that's Illuminati, that's all that stuff, and the conspiracy, I can go down that road. But it just seems like, you know, one doctor making, you know, one video, and then you're basing that upon that to announce to the public in the mountains here not to wear masks because
he
might get more infection from it.
He's basing what he said
seems
on
a little
14
bit,
studies.
Sketchy to me.
The same argument could be made about shutting down the economy. There was absolutely no evidence that was going to help anything, that they said it should flatten the curve, delay infection, and make it easier on the hospitals. But there was no objective scientific evidence supporting that. But they went ahead.
Well, I mean, for instance, Sweden didn't use masks. Their cases have gone up. The other countries around them, mandatory masks, their cases stayed low and flattened the curve down to a minimum. Multiple countries who have enforced strict mandatory mask laws have much more success than us. So I'm just trying to, like, correlate not just one source, but many sources, many countries, many doctors, and look at the big picture and see that the countries that made it the best, that are still able to travel right now, that are actually able to go out, they're the ones that stayed in lockdown and wore masks mandatory and enforced it. Does that come into anything you're thinking?
That's about as far as you can get from a scientific controlled study. Those countries have an infinite number of different reasons for people getting sick.
There isn't been enough study. That's kind of, you're right on both sides, but I would rather err on the side of caution. In my mind, the countries that have done well are the ones that mandatory the masks. Haphazardly enforced it, well, they're dealing with what we have, 77,000 people in one day. That's 42
exactly
people every minute.
The same
42 people in the United States are infected every minute right now. 3.5 million people infected. With a factor of 2 people, 2.5 will get infected by that one person infected. So I'm just saying, you know, maybe it's a shot in the dark, but hey, let's try wearing masks and see if it actually affects it. If we actually did it, we might not be in the situation with 77,000 people getting infected every day, 3.5 million Americans infected.
Let's listen to what Dr. Pete has
that's
to say,
my opinion,
sir.
I mean,
and rather than getting into an argument to waste time,
excuse me.
Let's see what Dr. Pete says, and then we'll move on. Thank you. Dr. Pete.
You can make a similar argument about anything you want people to do. Destroy the world economy without any scientific basis. Just do it as a precaution because it might seem reasonable.
Okay.
We have another caller.
Let's hold it there. I think, Michael, you're saying there's another caller?
Yeah, there's another caller.
Okay. Caller, you're on the air. Where are you from? What's your question?
I'm from Scarborville, and my question is, going back to the mask question, my understanding that we are being encouraged to wear masks to protect other people, and yet this guy who called in was saying that the people without masks were getting the virus more than the people with masks. So I'm confused about, it seemed like if we're wearing them to protect other people, I don't know how to put the question so it's understandable. Is the question I'm asking understandable?
Are you wondering why people are getting infected if people are wearing masks?
Yes. If the nurses are together and some of them are not wearing masks and some of them are wearing masks, and yet we're supposed to be wearing masks to protect the people around us, why are the people without masks, I mean, are these nurses together or are they separate rooms or separate hospitals?
Well, I think basically what it boils down to is that any mask you put on your face, your breath and your particles of virus that could be coming out of your lungs are going out the sides of your mask, and you're breathing in from the sides of your mask. Unless you wear a full body suit, which hopefully that's what they're providing for doctors and hospitals and for the nurses, unless you're wearing a full respirator, there's no way that you could be breathing in infected air. The masks have been shown to be ineffective at preventing these viral droplets that are in the air infecting people with flu. So that's what the studies show.
Okay, because
people want to wear masks because their government state tells them to, or because you want to go in a grocery store and they won't let you in without one, then you got to wear one.
Okay. Yeah, but what they've been saying, for the most part, it's not to protect you, the person wearing the mask. It's to protect the people around you.
Yeah.
I mean, they're doing that. I mean, that's kind of what the media and everybody's saying.
They don't come out
right out and say it isn't protecting you, they are saying that it's to protect anybody who has contact with you. Anyway.
What were you going to say? Dr. Pete, what were you going to say?
Dentists and surgeons who are operating on people with open wounds, it's reasonable for them to wear a mask while hovering over the wound so that they won't blow droplets. If they talk, it's very common for droplets of saliva to blow out, and obviously, a mask is going to prevent spit from getting into a wound.
Okay.
So for a surgeon, it definitely protects those they're operating on.
And I believe that might be the protocol even before this virus issue, that surgeons would wear a mask during surgery.
Yeah, that's been practiced for decades.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
And we have another caller. Caller.
Okay, I think got a funny feeling we won't get through too many questions
there
at this point.
Should I wait after this caller? Should I wait for callers?
No, go ahead. We're here for people to question.
Okay, someone else is calling.
You're on the air. Where are you from?
I'm from Bryceland.
Okay, go ahead. What's your question?
Well, I would like a detailed answer as to why the numbers are so low in Hong Kong and Korea and a few other places. Please explain in detail why those numbers are so low. Thank you.
Okay. So are they so low, and how low are they?
Okay, so let's look. I'm going to quote off some numbers from Worldometers, even though they might be dumping other causes of death in with these. I mean, even the government CDC, Deborah Burke, says that the coronavirus deaths are probably 25% over numbered. So Sweden has 556 deaths per million population. Italy has 579. Spain has 608. UK has 666. Andorra, Belgium has 845 deaths per million population. The USA has 429. So that's to put in perspective countries that have had lockdown and face mask measures compared with someone who had no lockdown, Sweden, with 556. It's right up there with everybody else. It's no higher, and it's, in fact, lower than some other countries. So now this caller asked about Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And Hong Kong. Dr. P, do you have any comment on the numbers in Korea and Hong Kong?
Well, so much of it depends on diagnosis. Currently in Florida and Texas, if they have a test to find virus and they're using that test 100 times more frequently than another place is, they're going to, no matter what the person dies of, they're going to tend to diagnose them as having died of COVID. But simply finding the presence of the virus has nothing to do with diagnosing the cause of death.
So, for example, someone might have liver cancer, they're dying, they go to the hospital, they catch coronavirus.
They get a positive
for coronavirus, and they die from their liver cancer, but they don't get put down as dying from their liver cancer. They get written up as died from COVID.
Every winter you see a sharp increase in mortality in all of the northern countries, and the coronavirus hasn't changed that whatsoever.
So all-cause mortality has not changed for 2020, when you've compared the all-cause mortality with this 2020 to previous years?
True. Everyone should look at the graphs that Professor Roncourt shows.
And we have another caller.
Okay, we have another caller. So
before we answer that, I just wanted to tell previous caller, the deaths per million population in South Korea were 267.
But how many people have been tested? That's the thing that I think we're getting at.
Right. So it depends on how many cases
Earlier you were talking about the protective value of estrogen and progesterone, and I was confused. I couldn't tell because I thought that more men were dying from this than women.
I would think that they were
protected by progesterone.
Yeah, I think the facts, well, supposedly the facts for being the facts are that men are more susceptible, and Dr. Pete has said that part and parcel of that is because women have protective exposure from progesterone. Progesterone is anti-inflammatory and does confer that lack of inflammation is a good outcome for women, whereas men don't express progesterone and they're not protected in the same way.
But women who are postmenopausal would not have the same protection?
Potentially not, no, because they would still be exposed to estrogen, which would be the inflammatory hormone, which certainly would be.
Mortality increases sharply after menopause, and after the age of 80, women die more frequently than men.
Mm. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. So, Dr. Pete, I'll say it again, but I do want to try and get this information out now so that people can look at this. They can go online, they can do their own searching, they can see that what we're talking about here is fact. It's not hearsay and it's not conspiracy. So as much as I want to let people call in, I do want to try and get some more of this information to people so that they can go and do their own research. Obviously, hearing about death and suffering is not good. And I've always said this from the very beginning. It's not that we don't want to acknowledge that people are dying. They are. But what we want to acknowledge, folks, and what we want to help people wake up to is that if they look further than what they are being told, they will find a different narrative. And it's that very narrative that I don't think wants to be exposed. And I think that covering up the figures, like Dr. P has talked about, from the death through January through March, to provide this spike at the outset of the announcement that COVID-19 was upon us and that people were dropping like flies, it's all part and parcel. Unfortunately, I sound like a conspiracy theorist, but unfortunately, a lot of conspiracies have quite an amount of truth woven into them. I wanted to get people familiar with a video that was done by Harry Vox, Harry V-O-X, his last name. He basically mentions the security memorandum number 200 by Henry Kissinger in December the 10th, 1974, which had a subject of the population, and also discusses the fact that the CDC have patented the Ebola virus. Now, what's that about? Mentioning that if the ruling class, whoever they are, saw wide-scale civil unrest in the USA, he predicted there'd be an outbreak in the USA of Ebola, and it's further dog training of the population, which is going to quell dissent or groups amassing. It's a divide and conquer strategy. He also mentioned that the World Bank and the World Economic Forum are very much behind the agendas surrounding things like global warming, and that this is almost certainly a planned event. I know Dr. Pete has spoken to some of the controversy surrounding research done by Bill Gates, supported industries, pharmaceutical places like that. And he's already mentioned that some of this really did not add up to much less than collusion, that vaccines were already being proposed and worked on from research that was being done that was essentially advanced warning. So, Dr. Pete, I know you'd mentioned them. We've got only a few minutes left.
Well, we do have one more caller. If we could make this the last caller, if we get to them. But,
okay.
Well, have Dr. Pete go ahead and have Dr. Pete finish that statement with you. But then we do have one last caller, and
okay,
she's
cool.
The last.
You've got about 2 minutes, and I'm quite serious. We're going to have to cut you off in 2 minutes or so because we've got to close up the show. Go ahead. Your question and where you're from?
Oh, hi, Sarah and Andrew. This is Katie.
Hey, Katie.
Dr. Pete. What concerns me about all this talk is, I think you're right. There are people, and there probably are numbers that aren't right and everything else. But I just want to really quickly relay a story of a friend of mine who was alive or was during the AIDS epidemic, not as bad as this, and it was only a sector of people and probably marginal people at that. But Dr. Fauci said, hey, guys, stop doing bad behavior. Stop doing this, or you're going to continue it. I said, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to stop my behavior. I'm not going to stop going to the bathhouses. We're not going to do it. And this particular person ended up being one of those HIV people who didn't get symptoms of the disease but carried it. And he ended up, killing a lot of his friends, in respect of not being careful. So I'm just saying, I don't think it's to be trifled with. I think that if just wearing masks, even if it's just a compassionate act for somebody else, I really think that it's for all of you. I think it's just really, I just think you better really check your facts, because you don't want to be that person either. And I'm just saying, I think it's true. There's probably a lot of doctors that see weird things. I also have another political question to ask, and you can do it or not do it, but are you guys Trump supporters?
You know what? I'm going to decline to answer questions that would politically implicate me in anything. I'm very independent. I'm an extremely independent person. I would say, if you want to call my number on politics, I would say that I'm a constitutionalist or libertarian who believes in free speech and investigation and uncovering lies and deception, and that's what it's always been about.
Well, I agree that there's a lot of lies and deception around this thing, but I personally just don't want to be that person who's Typhoid Mary if it's not lies and perception, that's all. And so that's my piece, and Dr. Pete, you can say your piece, and thank you for being in the show, and it's good to see different perspectives, but I think it could be dangerous. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Katie. And thank you, Dr. Pete. We're going to have to wrap it up with details for people to find you on before we close the show out in the next minute. So thanks so much. For people who have listened to the show, Dr. Ray Pete's website is raypeat.com. It's got fully referenced articles. My name's Andrew Murray.
My name's Sarah Johannesson-Murray.
We have a business, Western Botanical Medicine. We're alternative medicine practitioners, and we're always looking for the truth and not just to take things as they're being told. And it's always good to question, and not question and challenging and being warlike, but just objectively, scientifically challenging the narrative that we're told. And it's a good way to find out more information, and it keeps us free. That's what it's all about. I think the last closing sentence I wanted to come out with was, if those people give up their security for freedom, or their freedom for security, rather, they'll end up with neither. So let's not give up our freedoms. Let's question our governors. Let's question our government. Let's have open dialogue. And that's why free speech is so important, folks. Anyway, thank you and good night.
Thank you. Good night.
And KMUD would like to thank our underwriters, Humboldt Brand, with decades of knowledge in cultivation and extraction, representing over 100 local farms, offering compliance consultation, branding and packaging design, increased distribution channels, manufacturing, and networking events. Humboldt Brand is your local team located at 823 Redwood Drive in Garberville. For more information, their number is 923-9560 or info@thehumboldtbrand.com, by farmers for farmers. And I'll let you know that Redwood Acres Fairgrounds needs your help. The 9th District Agricultural Association has been severely impacted by COVID-19. The fair is canceled, as are all events for the foreseeable future, and they have taken a significant hit to their budget. They could see a permanent closure along with other fairgrounds throughout the state. They serve the community in many ways, and you can help by reaching out to local representatives to advocate for all fairgrounds. Send a letter by mail or email to elected officials or simply call them. You can find a template letter and more information, including contact information for officials, at callingallcommunities.org or by emailing Ben Brown at redwoodacres1@gmail.com. Yes, we're all in this together. You know, look out for the other people in the same position as you, and look out for Shyla and Shaka. They are coming on in, stepping out on a wing and a prayer, coming up next. A disinfecting accident with my computer.
We are disinfecting
the
hardware.
This is